This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. 50 years ago this month, and nearly 7 weeks after the assassination of John Kennedy, President Lyndon Baines Johnson made his first State of the Union address.
This administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America.
After the speech, President Johnson signed a nearly $950 million anti-poverty bill into law, creating Head Start, Medicare, Medicaid, and the Economic Opportunity Act, among others. Johnson envisioned a wealthy country where no child would go unfed or unschooled. 5 decades on, the official poverty rate has dropped, but childhood poverty is on the rise, as is income inequality. With no victory to declare, is it time for another war on poverty? Angela Glover-Blackwell responded to that question in New York Times' Room for Debate series. She's founder and CEO of PolicyLink, and she says, no, it's not time for another war. It's time for income equality. Angela Glover-Blackwell, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
So President Johnson declared war on poverty in 1964. At that time, 1 in 5 Americans was living in poverty, mostly in rural communities, mostly white. Now, how have the demographics of poverty changed since 1964?
Well, a lot of things have changed since 1964. Certainly the demographics of poverty reflects those changes. Of the total poor population, 41% are now white, and 52% are Latino or African American. We still have white people having a huge share of poverty, but they are no longer the majority. Also, it's no longer concentrated in rural communities. One of the headlines about poverty today is the growing poverty in the suburbs. Suburban poverty was something that was unheard of, but now you have both people falling into hard times in the suburbs of all races, and you have many Latino and African Americans moving to the suburbs, trying to find communities that could support their families, and then being devastated by the housing bubble.
Hmm. I'm wondering about the implications for the future, for the next generation, if this kind of poverty is not addressed.
Well, one of the things that's really so upsetting about poverty now is it's happening within the context of an economy that is failing most Americans. A few at the top are running away with everything, but most people are being left behind. Really disturbing is that the middle class is shrinking and economic and social mobility is disappearing. In fact, 45% of all black children who are born into the middle class, according to a Pew study, will end up poor. The comparable figure for whites is 16%. We also know that many people who go to work every day are working in low-wage jobs, making the minimum wage, which is not enough to keep a family out of poverty, or working in jobs that are part-time and not making enough to stay out of poverty. The United States of America really should be outraged that with all of the wealth that exists, that we still have so many people living in poverty. I think that the problem with poverty is, yes, we need to continue to have programs and strategies that create a strong safety net. No one should be homeless or hungry or feeling that they're living without dignity. But we need a new economy, one that creates opportunities for all.
Well, that's a hard case to make right now, especially when the willingness to make major investments or major policy changes to help the poor, there doesn't seem to be a lot of political will in Washington for that. What do you do?
Well, there is a difference between political will and public will. The public will seems to be there. Half in 10, a campaign that really has tried to reduce poverty, cut it in half in 10 years, did a poll that was released last week that actually showed that 70% of Americans are willing to invest in education and safety net programs and food stamps because they understand that it's important. I think the public is moving there because I think poverty has moved into nearly everyone's living room. If not the family, they know somebody, they've seen somebody, they see that when people fall on hard times, there ought to be a government there to support them. But yes, the political will seems not to be there, though I have been quite heartened by all of the stories that have been in the paper just this week talking about how Republicans are beginning to make poverty a priority. So we may be on the brink of seeing political will emerge, but certainly the public is there.
There's a lot of perception that poverty in America today is an issue of race. What gets lost when people think of this as a racial rather than an economic issue?
A lot gets lost. When people think of it as a racial issue, too often they are attributing characteristics of people who are black and Latino to keeping them in poverty, stereotyping, thinking it's their own fault, it's their behavior, it's the choices, the lifestyle choices that they're making. That may be true in a few cases, but for the most part, when you have an economy that is not producing enough jobs for people who lack skills, if you have, because of race, disproportionately cut people out of having access to education and skills, it's a race problem, but it's not an individual race problem. It's a society race problem. And that's exactly what's happened.
Well, I'm speaking with Angela Glover-Blackwell, founder and CEO of PolicyLink. She's speaking with us about the war on poverty. Where is it now, and where does it need to go? Well, let's go back to that speech, Angela, of Lyndon Johnson's, talking in this case about race.
Let me make one principle of this administration abundantly clear. All of these increased opportunities in employment and education and housing and in every field must be open to Americans of every color. As far as the writ of federal law will run, we must abolish not some, but all racial discrimination.
Lyndon Johnson there in his famous War on Poverty speech back in 1964, telegraphing quite a bit of his intention for the rest of his administration. Just 4 years later, however, in 68, shortly before his assassination, Martin Luther King Jr. launched the Poor People's Campaign. How had the war on poverty failed the poor?
A couple of things I just want to lift up before I answer your question, which is such a good question. It is really rewarding to see President Lyndon Johnson getting the credit for the war on poverty that he's now getting, because his administration was so overshadowed by all of the controversy about the war in Vietnam that many people forgot about the war on poverty and how important it was. It was successful in many ways in that it laid a foundation that has actually kept many people out of poverty. There are estimates that the poverty rate would be twice what it is today if it were not for food stamps and housing assistance and unemployment insurance and some of the job training programs that have helped youth and Medicaid and Medicare. Extraordinary in terms of laying the base. But the attention began to wane early, partially because of the war. I think there was also a lot of pushback in terms of the integration efforts that were going on, and people began to associate the war on poverty with another effort to help black people, even though the overwhelming majority of people who were poor at that time were indeed white. And so when we had the March for Poor People, the Poor People's Campaign, it was really an effort to move the conversation to not just be about rights, but to also be about the economy. And understanding that as we were removing racial barriers in education and housing and employment, we also are lifting up the economic issues.
What would Dr. King make of our current economic reality? For instance, the debate over raising the federal minimum wage.
Well, we know what side he would be on. He would be absolutely in favor of raising the minimum wage, and he would be a proponent for a living wage. Because even if we raise the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $10 an hour, and it would lift 5 million people out of poverty, there are many people who would still be living right on the edge of poverty. And so I am sure that Dr. King would be pushing for a living wage. He would be pushing for more voice in the workplace so that workers could actually work under the conditions and have the kind of benefits that they need for work to keep people out of poverty. He would be pushing us to have a conversation about race that acknowledges the progress that has been made but looks at where we still need to go. And the conversation about race would be different. Then it was black and white. Today it's about Latinos and Asians and Native Americans and white people, all understanding that they are in the same boat. And if the people who are going to be the future are not prepared to lead, to innovate, to participate in the democracy, the nation will not survive in the way that would make us all proud.
Angela Glover-Blackwell, thank you for your time today.
And thank you.
Angela Glover Blackwell, founder and CEO of Policy Link. You can read her Room for Debate opinion piece from the New York Times on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Thank you for joining us on this very special day of celebration for the bold and courageous man that was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Despite the copyrights, I hope I can freely call your attention to one bit of his I Have a Dream speech when he imagined a nation ringing the chimes of freedom from the snow-capped Rockies, from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, even from every molehill in Mississippi. Well, here we are. Let freedom ring. I'm Virginia Prescott. We'll be back at 2 tomorrow with more Word of Mouth here on New Hampshire Public Radio.